Static.
Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that finds the movies you watched when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. And make sure to listen through to the end for a new original song based on the movie we are covering. I'm your host, Bailey Moore, and I am pleased to introduce the guests tonight. It has been a long time coming. May I present the one, the only, Kelly Kegley Taylor.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited that you're here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Kelly. I'm an Aquarius, Pisces cusp. I don't really have anything going on right now. Quarantine has been so debilitating and suffocating, and nothing fun is happening for me right now. So, but yeah, other than that, I've known you for forever.
That's true. We've known each other for
a long time. We met when we were 5 years old in the meadow.
Right. And there was a unicorn.
Yes.
Remind me what happened when we saw the unicorn.
We both said, oh, wow, a unicorn, and then held hands and frolicked away.
Yeah, and we have known each other
since. As my memory serves.
No, I think that's exactly how it happened.
Yes.
So I have wanted to do this episode with you since I started this podcast, but because we live in different cities, that's made it really hard. One upshot of the pandemic is that I've had to figure out how to do this virtually, and that makes it possible to do this with you right now.
Oh, yes. Now that my schedule is like not as crazy also, and I'm no longer working at a radio station or working crazy hours, I've kind of mellowed out. I'm officially a house cat, an indoor cat, no longer an outdoor cat. I'm able to plan things ahead of time. So I'm very excited that I'm able to do this now.
I cannot tell you how excited I am to have you to do this episode with finally. So the movie that we're going to be doing tonight, you indirectly introduced me to this movie, sort of.
I did?
We'll get to all of that. So pretty please, Kelly, tell us what we're going to be watching tonight.
So we are going to be watching The Point, a story by Harry Nilsson, who was a singer back in the 70s. And I have actually never seen this movie. Right. So I'm excited to also watch it for the first time.
So if this is a movie that you've never watched, how is this something from your childhood?
So I know this story from the album The Point from Harry Nilsson. It's just probably one of the most fun things in the whole world to listen to. So I'm really excited to see how it translates to watching it.
You've been listening to this since you were little?
I've been listening to this since probably 2005. So I was probably 15 the first time that I heard it, if my memory serves correctly. I think we got the album on a trip to New York City with my family in the Virgin Records store.
Oh, wow. Was your mom familiar, or your dad familiar?
Yes, my mom was the one that was like, oh my God, The Point, we got to get this.
Did she know that it was a movie?
She didn't. No, she didn't know that it was a movie.
You said you kept it in your car?
Yes, we kept it in our car for a while until we were heading somewhere on a road trip. And my mom was like, you have to listen to this from beginning to end. It's not just one of those that you could just pop in for a quick trip down the road or, you know, to the store. You really have to listen to it from the beginning to the end. And it is a journey. Yeah, it is a wild ride, start to finish.
Did your mom know it was a movie?
I don't think she did, because whenever I was telling her about your podcast, I said, yeah, Bailey wants me to come on and talk about The Point. And she was like, that's not a movie. It's an album. And I was like, no, there's a cartoon. And she's like, well, I guess I didn't know that.
Wow. That's so cool. Can you, since you haven't seen the movie, to the best of your abilities, can you give us a summary of the story on the album?
Yes. So it is about a young man named Oblio and his best friend and dog, Arrow, and they live in the land of Point, and everything in the land of Point has one. except for Oblio. And there's a mean count who doesn't like that Oblio doesn't have a point, probably because his kid is not as good as Oblio. And he banishes him to the pointless forest. And it's the journey of him going through the pointless forest and discovering that maybe I'm not so pointless after all.
Yeah, it's a really good story.
So, and it's just goofy. I mean, Harry Nilsson is probably one of the goofiest artists out there, I think. And it's just a lot of fun to listen to him tell the story and then also sing the songs in between.
Yeah. I was trying to think of other albums that were kind of like that. And I'm sure there are some that exist, but I don't really know of any others off the top of my head. What is your favorite song?
Think About Your Troubles, hands down. I actually have a really good story about Think About Your Troubles. When Adele and I were in New York City a few years ago, so we show up to this karaoke bar where one of our friends, Chris J, is DJing, and we get there and there's literally nobody in there except for Chris, the bartender, and me and Adele. And we sat there and got to sing whatever songs we wanted the entire night. Amazing. And Mike, the bartender, came up and started singing a Harry Nilsson song. And so I was like, oh my God, Harry Nilsson, he's my favorite artist. And he's like, no way. He's my favorite artist. What is your favorite song? And I said, Think About Your Troubles. And like, we laughed and everything and continued singing and continued drinking. And then at 2 a.m. when the bar closed down, Mike, the bartender, as he was closing up, put on Think About Your Troubles and slow danced with me alone in a bar.
Oh,
isn't that so cute?
That's so cute.
And then we went our separate ways. It really was a magical night.
Brought together by Harry Nilsson.
I know. So Mike, the bartender, if you're listening, I'm now happily married and you missed your chance.
Yeah, you missed out.
Missed out, man.
So you mentioned this in your summary, but a significant part of the story and the point is the relationship between Oblio and his dog Arrow. And the song in the movie, Me and My Arrow, was actually a breakout hit from the album. And I see that you have a little dog on camera right now.
This is Idabelle. She's not as camera friendly as Bertha May, but yeah, she's attached to the hip to me. And so she'll be probably popping in periodically.
She might come into the time machine with you.
Hey, she'd probably love that.
Well, luckily I have installed a dog treat dispenser because sometimes dogs do end up in the time machine.
You hear that? Are you so excited?
Did you have a dog growing up?
I did. We had a little chihuahua. I'm going to put her down because she's going to be in my face the entire time if I don't. We had a little chihuahua terrier mix named Shadow. And he was my dad's Shadow. He went everywhere with him. He was his little Arrow. Aww. And we used to call him that. Like, we would be like, oh, there's that little Arrow.
Oh, that's so cute.
I have a really, yes, I do have a good dog memory of Shadow. We were on a road trip, probably listening to The Point because that was the designated road trip album. We listened to it on every road trip. And we stopped on, I want to say it had to have been Christmas Eve. And the only place that was open was a Dairy Queen. And my dad thought, oh, okay, well, I'm going to give Shadow a treat. And so he got him a small vanilla ice cream cone. And that got him so hyper. He was just in the back, just like squirming around and like, just like going crazy, whimpering, like going crazy. And my dad we had to like pull over and look at some Christmas lights so my dad could walk him. But I mean, he was a little bitty, like he was part chihuahua. So he was a little bitty dog and he was just like dragging my dad, like extended arm on the leash, like just back and forth throughout the streets, just full speed ahead. And he was never allowed to have ice cream after that.
Yeah, that sugar rush for a tiny chihuahua.
Poor little baby.
So I'm glad that you mentioned that this was your favorite road trip album, because I had mentioned before that you indirectly introduced me to the movie, because on a road trip that we went on, you played The Point for me, which was the first time I'd ever heard it. And it was through that I ended up learning that it was a movie. But that was a really fun road trip that we went on. Do you remember?
Yes. Yes, on our way to Dragon Con, right? Was that the time?
Yes, that was the time.
And we, to keep ourselves entertained, like this was before, I mean, early days of smartphones and Wi-Fi and all that, I would say. Not super early, but early enough that it was a struggle getting service everywhere. And so to keep ourselves entertained at rest stops, we would look up Homestar Runner videos and we wanted to recreate them. And so I would have my laptop open and I would try to type the script as fast as possible before my laptop battery died. And then we would have to rehearse in the car off of my laptop again before my laptop battery died. And it was a mess, but oh my gosh, we had so much fun.
Yeah, we recreated the videos. I think I was Homestar Runner and you were Strong Bad, right?
Yeah. I'm a long pants man. From what I can tell, you have no pants and you have blue soles glued to the bottom of your feet.
For anyone listening that has never heard of Homestar Runner, it was an early online flash animation site that had these humorous little short videos of animation. And the main characters were Homestar Runner and Strong Bad. Great. Well, it's about time to step into the time machine. I've already entered.
I'm so nervous. Where's my dog?
There's no need to be nervous. I mean, we only had the issues once with Cullen. It should be fine. But I've entered your coordinates and your door is set to appear on a timer and it's just about that time. Let me know if you start to see it manifest somewhere in the space around you.
Yes, I see it.
Okay. So before we step in, the point is easily accessible. It is on YouTube, Daily Motion, Amazon Prime, and other streaming platforms. So if you haven't seen it, this would be the place to pause and then rejoin us after you've watched it. All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, see you inside.
Okay.
Screening the time machine for common allergens, including gluten, ghosts, and Renaissance-era cartography.
Here we are.
Here we are.
You're finally seeing it from the inside.
Wow. I like what you've done with the place.
Thank you. Is it what you expected?
It is everything that I was hoping for, but nothing I was expecting.
Oh, that is quite a compliment. Would you like to explain to any new listeners where we are and what it does?
Yes. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's the slow-moving time machine. And it just moves time slightly slower than reality.
Right. Wait, hold on. No, we move slightly faster.
Slightly faster.
We move slightly faster than reality so that the time that we spend in here is less than the time it takes for us to watch it outside with the party.
Yes.
So we have essentially been split into two.
Yes.
We are watching it and concurrently inside the time machine.
Right now, I'm watching this movie for the first time with everyone else.
While also being right here with you.
And not having watched it yet.
Yes.
So once we get out of this little movie time machine, your memories will combine. It's a little confusing having two different timelines merge, but we're not in here for a really long time, so it shouldn't cause any lasting...
I'll let you know. I'll bill you if I have a headache and have to go to the doctor.
Great. Yes. Send it to me. Okay. So are you ready to learn about the point, the movie?
I'm ready.
Okay. So only slightly before the film was aired, the point was first released, as you know, as a concept album by the incredible singer-songwriter Harry Nilsson, which was conceived during an acid trip.
I did know that.
Yeah. Cool. The idea that came upon him during that said trip was, quote, "I was on acid and I looked at the trees and I realized that they all came to points. And then the little branches came to points and the houses came to a point. I thought, oh, everything has a point. And if it doesn't, then there's no point to it." And now we have the point.
Yeah.
Before we get into the bit of background I found on the movie, I want to mention a few interesting facts about Harry Nilsson. You said that he was one of your favorite artists. Do you know very much about him?
I don't know very much about his background. I know No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, well, I've got a few facts for you. And also, I have put into the pre-show, before we actually start the movie, a, like, 6-minute documentary on Harry Nilsson, so you'll learn even more. Oh, well, you will relearn even more once you integrate with your other self that is learning right now. So,
yeah.
So I've been listening to a lot of Harry Nilsson's music in preparation for this, and I have to say, I like his music a whole lot. Did you know that there's a song called The Puppy Song?
I did know, yeah. I was going to ask you, what's your favorite Harry Nilsson song that's not on the point?
Well, right now it's The Puppy Song. I really like that song.
That's a great, it's a great song. My mom actually told me that she used to play Break in My Heart when the Mormons would come to her door because it would always run them off. I don't know if you've heard that one.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. You're breaking my heart. You're tearing me apart. So.
Yes.
Yes. You know, we could say that on this podcast. It's fine.
I look, I'm not trying to get into trouble here. I'm not trying to shake any trees.
All right. So here's what I have. I just have like a few interesting facts about him. He was the first person to record and distribute an album with a mashup song on it. Yeah.
Which one is it?
It happened to be a cover of a Beatles song called You Can't Do That, with musical phrases and lyrics from other Beatles songs. Have you heard that one?
Yes. Bailey, it's like our song because you're a Beatles fan and I'm a Harry Nilsson fan.
Yeah, that's very true. I hadn't thought about it that way. But I did think about the fact that I like the Beatles and you probably knew that I liked the Beatles, so I thought it would come up. So it appeared on the album Pandemonium Shadow Show, which was not a great commercial success, but was lauded within the industry, and at some point made its way to the Beatles. And when they were asked in an interview who their favorite American musician was, both John Lennon and Paul McCartney answered, can you guess?
Harry Nilsson!
Yeah. And they hadn't even met. So after the success of The Point, consumers were clamoring for more content from Harry Nilsson. Two of his earlier albums were out of print, Pandemonium Shadow Show and Aerial Ballet. But he felt that both of those albums were already dated. So he took some songs from one album and some songs from the other, re-recorded them, and released them on the first ever remixed album, Aerial Pandemonium Ballet.
Mmm.
Yeah, so the process of remixing albums was more common in the late 70s, but he was the first one to ever do it.
Look at him go.
I know. Remember how I mentioned the Beatles, like, just a few seconds ago?
I do remember.
Yeah, so they didn't personally know Harry Nilsson at the time, but they later became very, very good friends. And after the Beatles' public endorsement of Harry Nilsson, he had a lot of people reaching out to him. I could not find any anecdotal information on how The Point was optioned for broadcast television, but it seems that the animated movie and the narrative-driven musical album were developed fairly concurrently, even though the album came out like a couple months before the movie. I assume that it would take a little bit of time to animate a whole movie. I assume
yeah.
It's not more than a couple months.
Especially back in the 70s. Is that when they animated it? In the 70s? When was it released?
The movie came out in February 2nd, 1971, and the album came out the end of 1970.
That was a quick turnaround.
Right. Oh, that was the very next thing. It's funny that I was having such a hard time finding it in my notes. It was the next paragraph. Okay. So The Point was released on ABC, like I just said, February 2nd, 1971. As the very first animated movie to air on primetime TV in the USA.
Wow. And
it was part of ABC's highly rated series Movie of the Week. Now, this is the part of the story I found truly fascinating because we deal with a little bit of TV history, and I think TV history is really interesting. I think the only episodes we hit on any TV history for Memory Static were episodes on Mr. Boogity, Harriet the Spy, and most recently, Crybaby Lane. But TV at this point in time, the early 70s, was very different than any television either of us grew up with. What are your early memories of what TV was like?
Oh my gosh, we had 6 channels to put on a VCR. You had to have it on channel 3.
Oh, wow.
We had to record every single Power Rangers that came on. And I always caught Hercules and Xena at 6 and 6:30 on Channel 39. I wanted to say the CW, but it was the WB back then, right? WB 39. Yes,
yeah.
I sound like I'm a million years old saying that.
Well, that was basic TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like cable was really expensive and not everybody had it. And even with cable, there was only 52 channels, which seems like a lot more than six. But compared to what... Okay, if you have TV now, which like most people our age don't really have TV, but there's like hundreds of channels. And even with just streaming services, you have so much content that it's really hard to like figure out what to watch. And it's likely that all the friends you have aren't likely watching the same things.
Right.
Right. So by the 1960s, it was clear that TV was big and wasn't going away anytime soon. The relationship between broadcast television and Hollywood were strained. Hollywood harbored a haughty fearfulness regarding the future of television. They felt that the medium was inferior and worthy of scorn, but at the same time saw TV's potential for subverting and redirecting the profits of their industry and were very nervous about what that would mean for them. So, in an effort to check the fast-growing medium, the large film studios required television networks to pay very high fees to broadcast any of their movies. Okay, so if there is anything consistent about human nature, it is that whenever there's an inconvenience, there is ultimately inventiveness. Could you agree with that sentiment?
100%.
Yeah. So television producers began toying with the idea of producing their own original low-budget films to cater to the demands for movies on television without paying those high fees for every broadcast of a theatrical film. So, the irony of it all is that while trying to keep the television broadcasting networks under their heel, the Hollywood studios encouraged the television networks to be exploring options that directly rivaled them. And so, here we are today, with movies made for Netflix rivaling movies out of the major Hollywood studios.
Right.
I think it's really fascinating to see where it started.
Yeah.
So, at this time, there were three major television networks. CBS, NBC, and lagging significantly behind those two was ABC. So, yeah, three networks. It's just hard to imagine TV that way.
Yeah.
So, ABC was not the first to experiment with their own original films, but they were the first to shorten the block to an hour and a half with their Movie of the Week series, as opposed to the two-hour blocks on other networks. And so, their films were less expensive. This series was highly successful and really established ABC as a true rival of CBS and NBC. The Point was part of the second season of Movie of the Week and was a huge hit. The Point was animated and directed by Fred Wolf, who also animated and directed The Mouse and His Child, which we covered in our final episode for last season, as well as the Tootsie Roll Pop commercials with the owl.
Yeah.
And Puff the Magic Dragon.
What?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I know. It's so cool. I love learning about these things.
Yeah.
So, Kelly.
Yes,
until Bailey. Until you join yourself at the party, the narration you are accustomed to from the album is Harry Nilsson himself.
Yes.
But he's not the narrator in the movie.
I had heard that. I'm a little apprehensive about it.
Okay. Well, hopefully I can set your feelings at ease in a certain way, if not completely. Because I know that no one can truly fill the shoes of Harry Nilsson himself.
Right.
But this is a little bit of an interesting part of the movie, because not only is he not the narrator of the movie, for that matter, the narrator of the movie we are watching right now out there is not the same person that narrated The Point when it first broadcast. The first time it aired, do you know this already?
I did a little bit of research, but I'm excited for you to tell me because I've already forgotten.
Okay. So the first time it aired, the narrator was Dustin Hoffman.
Whoa!
Yes.
He was a friend of Harry Nielsen's, and when he accepted the role, his contract stipulated that for the price of $20,000, his voice would only be used for that one broadcast, so that was it.
How much money is $20,000 in 1970s money?
That's a really good question. Let me look that up.
Calculating, 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 calculating.
Okay. Adjusted for inflation, $20,000 in 1971 is equal to $130,891 in 2021.
Dang, that's $1,000 a minute.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. So if the network ever wanted to re-air The Point, they would have to re-record the vocals for just that one character. And they did that. Not once, not twice, but three other times.
Wait.
Fact check.
It's not $1,000 a minute. It's 90 minutes. It's more than $1,000 a minute. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just didn't want to sound like a complete doodah.
No, that's okay. I mean, I did not math check you. I just took you at face value because I don't want to do that work.
Well, it's more than $1,000 a minute. So it's even more impressive than we were thinking.
So $20,000 in 1971 is like a small fortune.
Yeah.
I mean, you could buy a house. You could probably buy a couple houses with that.
Well, yeah, because back in the 70s, houses were like $5.
Yeah. As opposed to like $300,000 now.
Right. We're both homeowners now because we're adults. So yeah, it's not a, they're expensive.
Yes, they're very expensive.
Even the bad ones are expensive.
I know. Back to the narrator. It was first re-recorded by someone named Alan Barsman, who was also the voice of the Father Mouse and the Mouse and His Child. So he was likely brought in by Fred Wolf, the animator.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because I found some other things that mentioned him, and they were all like, I don't know who this is. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, but he obviously did some work with Fred Wolf, so that's likely how he got that role. Honestly, I wish I could find out more on Fred Wolf, to be honest, as an animator. I'm so into these smaller animation studios from this time period. I think it's so fascinating, but back on track. After Alan Barsman, in the 80s, the narration was recorded again by Alan Thicke. Do you know who that is?
Canadian, Robin. Canadian. Sorry, we just watched The Masked Singer, and Robin Thicke kept going, as my father always says, Canadian, Robin, they're Canadian. And that's now.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
He sounded just like him. It was wild, but yeah. And I also know Alan Thicke from, this is so random, from the celebrity wife swap episode where their wives swap, him and Gilbert Gottfried's wives swap houses for a week. And they're so vastly different. And Gilbert Gottfried and Alan Thicke hate each other.
Oh my gosh. That sounds really funny.
It's pretty funny. It was a pretty good episode.
For anyone else listening out there, the reason why he was on that show, what was it called? Trading Wives? What was it?
Celebrity Wife Swap or Trading Houses. I don't know.
But the reason why he was a personality for that reality TV show is that he was a big TV personality in the 80s for his main roles in Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, and Growing Pains.
Yes.
But that's still not the narrator we're going to be listening to out there.
Goodness.
Or the one we are listening to out there. At some point, I couldn't figure out exactly when, there was an interest in distributing The Point for home entertainment. But when they began looking for the original, they discovered that the original negative had been lost. So our version is digitized from an old 16mm print, which is why there are scratches at the very beginning. During the credits. Anywho, that is besides the point. Have any guesses who might have done the last narration unless you happen to see it in your research?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah, I would say maybe. How many are we up to right now?
So we had Dustin Hoffman, Alan Barsman, then Alan Thicke.
I'm going to double that and do six. Yeah.
No, there's only one more.
Oh.
Do you have any idea who it is?
Is it? I don't know. Who is it?
Okay. I have a hint for you. I implicitly referred to him earlier by way of a 60s mega pop band.
Wait, it's one of the Beatles.
It's one of the Beatles.
Which one is it?
I will say he's the one that did most of the like TV stuff in the 80s.
Is it Ringo?
It's Ringo. Ringo Starr of the Beatles.
Okay, I'm more excited about. If it can't be Harry, it might as well be Ringo.
I thought that it might make you feel a little bit more reassured. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so I only have two more things. One of them is casting trivia. Oblio is voiced by Mike Lookinland, who was Bobby Brady on the Brady Bunch. On the Brady Bunch.
Oh.
Bobby Brady on the Brady Bunch. And the last thing is that The Point has been adapted into a stage play in the 70s, starring members of the Monkees, Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz.
I had no idea. That's incredible.
Yeah, I wonder why I haven't heard of more like middle schools or high schools putting on The Point. I think more of a middle school thing.
Oh, it's man. I wish.
Yeah, right? Well, that's all I really have.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see it for the first time as I am seeing it for the first time right now. I can't wait to get my mind and my memories back together.
Yeah, do you feel the lacking of half of you?
I do, but I don't.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm only using half my brain at any given time anyway, so.
Right, so on either side, you're at full capacity.
Right, exactly. Nobody should notice a thing.
All right, well, are you ready to rejoin everybody else?
I am, I think. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're the professional. You tell me.
Okay, well, let's go.
Let's go.
Please watch your step as you exit the time machine. Tripping out of the time machine may involve
tripping through time. Goodbye.
We are here at the Memory Static Zoom meeting for The Point. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Kelly, how are you feeling? It seems like I'm starting to remember that an issue with the version I wanted to play with Ringo Starr, it was actually Alan Thicke. Is that what you're remembering?
Yes.
Are your memories, like, joining together okay?
They're melding a little bit. It's all coming back to me now. Yeah, we're getting there.
Okay, so no problems with a split mind or feeling disoriented or anything like that?
No, like I said, I'll bill you if anything comes up and I have to go to the doctor.
Okay, good. Well then, let's open it up to everyone else and I'll check in with you at the end and get your thoughts on the movie. But everybody else, what did y'all think about the movie?
I liked it a lot. It reminded me a lot of my movie pick, which was Phantom Tollbooth. I think that they were animated in the same time period, and they definitely have a lot of similarities.
I totally see that. You know, I actually thought about that many times while watching this and doing the research for this, that there are a lot of similarities there.
I just looked it up. The Phantom Tollbooth was 1 year prior to this movie.
Ah, so I got the original. I thought the soundtrack, the way that they chose to like illustrate parts of the movie with the songs, I mean, was also pretty similar. That was one of the things that made me start thinking about it.
I want a Tootsie Pop after watching that movie. That's all I can think about right now.
I liked this movie a lot. One thing that I noticed was, unlike the Phantom Tollbooth, the lyrics in the songs had some themes that really seemed more targeted at an adult audience rather than at children.
You would know this, Bailey. Was this before there was like a children's genre of movies?
This was the very first animated movie to ever be broadcast on television.
Wow.
Thanks, Cullen. Who else saw this movie when they were little?
I grew up on this movie. This movie was the foundation of my creativity. I love this movie. I believe I first saw it when I was 4, and I've seen it pretty regularly since then. You know, as a kid, you just watch movies, you pop them in, and I've seen that film so many times, but it's been quite some time since I have had the opportunity to watch it again. So watching it as an adult was a unique experience. Like what Colin was saying, I did not remember how adult that movie was. Mm-hmm. But the imagery was fascinating and mesmerizing to watch as a young child. I love that film. It's truly wonderful.
I'm really glad that you're here, Jeremy. So everybody else, this was their first time seeing it?
I saw it a few months ago, actually, in doing concept album research.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so I was excited to join to really watch it, because that time I tuned out a few times and I was cleaning. But this time I could pay attention while there were other people watching.
What were you working on that you were doing research on concept albums?
Concept album, I guess. I really want to make one, and this makes me want to make one even more. I'm not sure what it's about. I thought it was about a bipartisan relationship, you know, but that was like 2 years ago, and that seems boring to me now. I think it's just about the chord songs that I've written in the chord E. And also, like, listening, watching again tonight confirmed that for me, because a lot of the songs sounded very similar.
You know, actually, I read an interview that had, I think, Harry Nilsson's son in it, and he was saying that he had orchestrated the point a few times, and that all of the songs, he said that there's like one minor chord.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is in major, and that it's interesting that it can be like that and still be so expressive.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a huge Nilsson fan. One is one of the songs that I've been playing during the pandemic. That's one of my five songs that I practice. So I found myself wondering how many versions of this there are. Like, so there's the Ringo version, there's the, maybe Alan Thicke. Was that Alan Thicke?
Yes, we heard Alan Thicke.
It was Alan Thicke tonight. Mm-hmm. And then there's the album, you know, and then there's the songs cut up out of the album. A lot of that dialogue is not in the album.
Yeah, the difference was interesting. The dad was a much more affirmative personality. Ringo Starr's performance was somewhat playful. He was a very, almost an airheaded dad.
I can agree with that, yeah. What was your favorite part tonight?
For me, definitely the music video sequences. It felt very much like, it reminded me of like the Yellow Submarine, and the songs were very interesting. I don't know if I liked all of them, but they were all definitely interesting and unique. So I did enjoy the songs, actually, because they were definitely telling the story through song, which I'm not a fan of kids movies when they're just singing to sing and they're not really progressing the story. But I definitely appreciated the fact that it was at least moving the plot along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they did a very good job of adapting it and making it longer.
I really liked the dancing round ladies singing part. That was like one of my favorite scenes with those ladies.
I love that Oblio is like, I don't know what's happening, but he has this big smile on his face.
He loved those big ladies. He loved it.
He loved it.
I mean, he dreamt about them later, right, Kelly?
100%, yeah.
My favorite scene was definitely the Rock Man.
Same.
That was hilarious.
Oh, I took a picture of that, and that's now my Discord picture, the Rock Man.
Wonderful.
I loved how every other word he said was 70s hippie slang. It was great.
My favorite scene was the haggling over bird sizes between the dad and son. It was just a very meta moment. When I was your age, we'd listen to stories. But then my favorite song was definitely the Think About Your Troubles one. Think About Your Troubles. I want to learn that one.
What a beautiful moment that was. The scene was gorgeous.
I don't know if Nathan is going to join us, but he remarked that this was the first time he'd ever seen decomposition in a cartoon or a children's show.
Yeah, that was weird. Super weird. I was like, what is happening?
It was surprisingly graphic.
That was part of what I was talking about earlier with the music. They literally talking about like, and then the whale decomposed, it died, it gave its nutrients back to the ocean. That doesn't show up in kids' music these days.
They probably saw this and they were like, never mind, we're not doing that anymore.
The first and last. What stood out to me most in this particular viewing was the transitions, actually. I loved how, as he's going through the forest, so many portions of it just seem unfinished, not drawn in. There was so much blank. I thought it was such an interesting touch to it, almost like the absence of the point, which was also kind of the point.
One thing that they did choose to include in the backgrounds was a very obvious vagina. Did everyone catch that?
Wait, where?
When he's going to the Pointless Forest, he passes by a vagina. It's colorful. It's yes. Anatomically correct.
Yeah.
You know, I think
there
I
were a lot of vaginas. And then there was one like vagina with obvious legs. And you're like, well, that's definitely a vagina. The other ones were like art interpretations.
Does anybody have a least favorite part?
I have questions about the resolution, the denouement. Let's talk about that.
Does anybody feel like the ending undermines the message of having a purpose, even though you're...
Yes.
I didn't understand the point of the ending.
Yeah, I didn't like the ending.
What is it exactly that you didn't like?
It's like he shouldn't have a point. I was totally expecting them to just be like, oh, no, he's got a round head or whatever. We're going to accept you for your round head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. He's a part of the society, with even though he's different. But no, he's got a point. And it's like, wait, what? It just came out of left field. And then the movie just ends. And it's like, wait, what? It's so sudden. It's like, yeah. Okay,
like,
what's
why
next?
Is that, what caused everyone else to lose their point? Maybe it's like a metaphorical thing. And he found his point. But that invalidated everyone else's point.
Or maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point.
But then the entire population of that city just decided that at the same time.
Points in your mind, man.
I was expecting the Ice King to take his wig off and reveal that he had a round head this whole time as well.
Exactly. That would contribute to the theory that was going on in the comment about how the king's actually Oblio's father.
Well, and also what I'm struggling to figure out is that he was banished because he was different. And then he came back and he grew a point and everybody lost their point. So he's still different. He's still an involuntary celebrity because of it. Like, it didn't solve anything.
Mm-hmm. Did everybody lose their point? Did the whole... I missed that. Did
the whole
society... Even the buildings
lost its point.
Yeah, even the buildings lost their point.
Oh, yeah.
It's bizarre.
Speaking of vaginas, did anyone catch the dick building?
Which one?
I'm
there was one in
out.
Particular that had the flared head and everything. It was wonderful.
I'm only looking out for vaginas, I guess. That's all I see.
You're missing out half the battle.
I feel like with the ending, the writers wanted to do like this dramatic gesture, you know, because like he's overcome all these trials and stuff. So like he has a point now, but they didn't really
explain it.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem to mesh with what they were going for most of the movie.
The ending felt cheap. I'll be honest. It always has.
Do you feel like there's any difference between the way that the movie ends and the way that the album ends?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I think that pretty much summed it up the exact same way. I don't think that there was a huge difference between the movie and the cartoon.
Except you don't see the transformation in the album, I guess. That was kind of tacked on. Maybe that was what that additional story development from Fred Wolf was all about.
Here's another idea for your story. Let's invalidate the whole thing.
Here's an idea.
It's great. It's great. It's great as it is. But what if we twist it?
Yeah, you think that he goes through the Pointless Forest. He goes through all of that to realize that even though he doesn't have a literal point on his head, that there is a point to him and the way that he interacts with the world. And then he goes back and he gets a physical point. It just like, I don't know.
I will say in the album, the count's point doesn't just disappear. It just flops over.
Ah, so that is different.
I feel like the ending had been like, Oblio has a point now and the count lost his point and that was it. Maybe that would have played better.
Nope. Count's just left with a limp point.
I kept thinking of the count from Sesame Street every time they mention the count. So I don't know if that's probably just me.
Aren't they both purple?
Maybe that's why. But I just, every time he said the count, I was just like, 1 point, 2 point.
It would have been nice for like the denouement if the count had a change of heart, like a Grinch-esque situation. His heart grows 3 sizes or whatever, and he understands that like you don't need a point to have a point. But that's not what happened.
No, That isn't what happens.
I'd like to read a synopsis that is an analysis of this movie from the hero's journey perspective, because there are definitely, I can recognize some of the tropes, but like the conclusion, I'm not sure how it would fit into that circle.
What are some of the tropes that you recognize?
He has the wise advisor that guides him through the journey, kind of, who also is kind of like the Cheshire Cat, the very Alice in Wonderland vibes. Yeah, the pointless man. He just goes through all of these very obvious steps and he learns something each step of the way.
So a big part in the movie is the relationship between Oblio and Arrow, and there's a whole song about it. Does anybody have any favorite dog or pet memories from childhood?
We're making them now. We just adopted 3 kittens. We're making a lot of memories and taking a lot of pictures.
Do you want to tell us their names?
Yes, yes. This is Athena.
And we've also got Banjo and Escher, who are sitting off camera.
Escher will scream if we try to pick him up.
Let's see if I can get that on the audio capture. Can you say hi, Escher? No, he refuses to scream the one time.
He's very camera shy.
Are they all wearing cones?
The last one's not. These two just got fixed, and the other one has already healed from that.
When I was about 12 or 13, I made a steak, and I was very proud of the steak. It was a beautiful steak. And I took it into the other room. I sat down to watch some TV and I realized, oh, I forgot my drink. So I ran back into the kitchen real fast, grabbed myself some water and ran back to my steak in front of the TV in the other room around the corner, just in time to see my darling cat making his way happily down the hall, carrying a steak in his mouth. And I chased that fucker around the house for a solid couple of minutes before I finally got that damn thing back.
Did you eat the steak?
Did it taste okay?
No, I didn't.
Wait.
It had been dragged across the floor.
Oh, so you just threw it away.
I fed it to the dogs.
Yeah, that'll teach that cat.
When I was really little, we would sometimes babysit the hamster from down the street. His name was Silver. And I always loved keeping Silver. And Chaney, my sister, and I would make mazes out of stuffed animals for Silver to navigate. And we would let him go into one side and wait until he came out the other. And we just loved building those mazes.
So Me and My Arrow was the hit single off of this album, mm-hmm. is what I heard, which is surprising to me, but I think says something about people in there.
Me and My Arrow.
I had an uncle with a dog named Arrow, and now I'm wondering if he got it from this album.
Very likely.
Right.
This is something that Kelly and I talked about earlier, but I think that Harry Nilsson was a big dog fan because he has a song named The Puppy Song, and there's like other songs in which he references dogs. So, do you have a favorite road trip album from childhood? Or alternatively, what is your favorite road trip memory?
Now 3, the best album composition of all time.
What was it?
Now 3? Yeah, it's absolutely the best. And if you really want some classics, just go back and really look and see what you're missing out on right now.
Now 3. What are we on now at this point? Now 28?
No, more than that. More than that, Bailey.
Now 30?
I got the whole album pulled up here. We got some good stuff on here.
What are the highlights from Now 3, Micah?
What are the highlights?
That is what I said.
God. Smash Mouth All-Star. Yeah.
Hey Now.
You're an All-Star.
Classic.
Yeah. There we go. American Woman, Lenny Kravitz, because that's how we all learned how to truly fall in love, right? Oh, I learned my first Spanish in Balimos. Yeah. So that was fun. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm too far from the mic. Kelly keeps telling me. But yeah. It's an absolute bop. You should really dig in.
Next road trip, I'll remember that.
So I have really early road trip memories of the Blue Album and Pinkerton by Weezer. And I remember when I was like 12 or 13 and I figured out what albums that music was from, Bailey, our mother was very hesitant to let me have those CDs because they weren't appropriate for children. And I didn't understand why. Then I listened to the albums and I understood why.
Currently, my favorite Road Trip album is Cullen's album that he'll have to remind me the name of.
Soaring Through the Wind, that one?
Yes, the one that you gave me.
Oh, no, it's not Soaring Through the Wind, Cullen.
Oh, no?
I think you made a compilation for Kelly, a special one.
Oh, so it's Kelly's album then?
Yeah.
I think that I said that it was just my album, but it's the same songs as everybody else's. But we're going to pretend like you burned it just for me.
Every song on that disc is just for you and no one else has even heard them. So cherish that because it is a unique artistic experience.
Thank you. I will.
Mike, did you have a road trip story?
I will just always remember this one road trip. A friend and I moved another friend to Boston for college and we listened to the Presidents of the United States of America 2. I guess it's their second album. And I just will always remember it. I didn't really listen to them, you know, at that time, and the three of us were very different, but we all connected on that album and were by the end of the road trip, like singing every track together. And there's some bops in there. I feel like he plays it on with one string. A lot of these songs are with one string, but it's also, I realize, kind of an early, one of my first concept albums to listen to. I think it's also a concept album. It's like framed as a show. Starts with, you know, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and ends with good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And yeah, they're a ridiculous band.
Wait, but so you listened to that on repeat?
It was like this one and one other of their albums. But I think this was just the one that we all agreed on because it was either this or like, you know, I was into jazz and, you know, Joey was into metal and Jason was maybe into country, you know. so this was kind of where we met.
It's nice that all of y'all were into listening to it over and over and over.
Right. Again. We could all at least appreciate the harmonies from different angles. And
you know, that makes me think of a time that I went, it was like the only time I've ever been in a musical group that went on tour. And it was a very short tour. We went to Santa Fe and then we went to Denver, Colorado. And we listened to the radio a lot. And the theme of the road trip became Come On Eileen because it kept coming up on the radio like every 30 minutes. And every single time it came on, all of us were just as enthusiastic, if not more so, because it was like, this is it. This is our theme. It was really fun.
That's cool. And I think like concept albums and mixtapes are both really good things for road trips because they tell a story and it can like, you know, string you along for a good few hours.
So Kelly.
Yes.
What was it like watching this movie, one, for the first time after being so familiar with the album, and two, watching it with a group of people?
Watching it for the first time was a wild ride. It was so much fun. It lived up to my expectations, I would say, but just barely. And watching it with a group of people was a lot of fun because we were able to kind of feed off of each other's thoughts and kind of get, I'm glad that I'm not the only one who thinks that some of the parts were a little crazier than others.
Was there anything that deviated from what your expectations were?
I think the ending, definitely, like we discussed, was a little weird. I do think that they did a better job in the album describing kind of what happened rather than just showing it and then ending the cartoon. And other than that, I mean, it was pretty much exactly what I was hoping it would be.
Oh, great. I'm so glad to hear that. In comparison to Harry Nilsson's narration, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you place Alan Thicke?
He was no Harry Nilsson, that's for sure.
So he's not even on the scale.
Well, and what's really cool is whenever you listen to the album, I mean, you can even hear him like turning the pages as if he was reading a story to you, and he does all the different voices. It's so much fun. So I just don't think that you can compare.
Oh, that's completely fair. Well, thank you so much for choosing this movie and doing this episode with me and sharing it with everyone.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everybody else, for sharing the movie with us and sharing your stories. And thank you to everybody that's listening out there, until next time, return your videos here.
Return your videos here.
I'm finding it hard to keep myself from always feeling sad, and I'm dwelling on thoughts, framing my life as altogether bad.
Leaving for the day, our despondent protagonist took a moment to stand in front of the mirror and take a look.
When you look at me, I'm seeing you and all the things you do. Every bit of the good, all of the bad, it makes up what is you. Always changing, rearranging, never stopping, always becoming.
Then came a realization. The image seen in the mirror's reflection was nothing like the one seen in the eyes of family and friends.
It's the life that we live most every day. We may cry, we may laugh, we may work, we may play, and we try to keep unhappiness away. It's the way of life we live most every day. Everyone has their own opinions, fills your head and sends it spinning, trusting in their first impressions, telling me their own life lessons, never answering any questions, leaving me with nothing but suggestions from my own reflection.
One of my first concept albums to listen to. I think it's also a concept album. It's like framed as a show. It starts with "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen." Want to? Want to? Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. I'm not sure what it's about. I thought it was about songs that I've written in the chord E.
When I was your age, we'd listen to stories. 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 Listen.
You know, I was into jazz, and Joey was into metal, and Jason was in maybe into country, you know? A lot of the songs sounded very similar. So this was kind of where we met. I really want to make one, and this makes me want to make one even more.
You can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you want to, or you can choose to not have a point. Maybe you can choose to have a point if you choose to have a point if you want to, or choose to have a point.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
The Memory Static Podcast is hosted by Bailey Moore, with editing by Bailey and Cullen Moore. The slow-moving time machine is voiced by...
Original music written by Bailey and Colin Moore. Produced by Colin Moore. With vocal samples from Michael Furstenfield. Find more of Colin's music at plattuxedo.net. To learn more about the film events, follow Memory Static Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you like the show, please consider donating to our Patreon. If you have stories to share about any movie we've covered, please write us at memorystatic@gmail.com. Special thanks to our guest, Kelly Kegley Taylor. And thank you to all of our party guests. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.